Hello and welcome to Athletic Therapy Now, a podcast for athletic therapists by an athletic therapist. My name is Ashley Burr and I will be your host. Thank you for joining us today. Welcome to episode 6, Athletic Therapy Now, Minimalist Footwear. And today our guest is Nathan Simon, or Nate. Nate is a certified athletic therapist holding a bachelor's degree in kinesiology, having graduated with honors from the University of Manitoba in 2021. He is also a peer-reviewed author for his work in Dr. Tricia Scriven's lab regarding the effects of kinesiotaping on scapular dyskinesis. Nate's AT portfolio ranges from treating patients in clinic to working with local sports teams, as well as international competitions. His thirst has led him to focus on areas of interest, such as myofascial cupping, CTE and concussions, and of course, minimalist footwear and foot health. Nate is passionate about active living and community wellness. This passion is evidenced by the fact that he is currently completing firefighting training with dreams of becoming a career firefighter while continuing to serve the community in his various roles as an athletic therapist. He believes in making knowledge translation accessible and practical, thereby helping folks help themselves live better, more active, and pain-free lives. So Nate, welcome to the podcast. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, the first question I like to ask everybody is, in one sentence, can you share your favorite thing about being an athletic therapist?
Oh yeah. So for me, it's the versatility. I love the opportunity to work in so many different environments with so many different people. From athletes to, you know, the older population to the weekend warriors to, you know, it just gives you a lot of variety, and that's the spice of life. So I love that about athletic therapy.
It's great. Yeah, I love that too, that there's just so many directions to go and so many options. And even in the career path you're in with athletic therapy, you can play around in different areas a little bit too.
Absolutely. You get to be a teacher, a student, an athlete, a Band-Aid specialist, all those fun things. So it's great.
Yeah. Yeah. And for those of you who don't know, Nate helps me out with my myofascial cupping course. And we worked together. He was a student at the University of Manitoba and did a practicum placement at the clinic way back when. So that's how we got to know each other. So, being a podcast on minimalist footwear, Nathan, can you tell us how you got into barefoot shoes?
Sure. That's a great segue because, you know what? Ashley was the first person to, I guess, really put barefoot shoes front and center in my face. And I was really I was really skeptical at first. I had a lot of questions for you. I was hesitant to accept it, because Ashley's, you know, once she's in on something, she's very passionate about it. She's in on it. So I was like, this is voodoo. This is whatever, you know. But then I got looking into it. I was in a course, a biomechanics course at the same time, actually, with Dr. Singer. And so we had a chance to explore minimalist footwear through some of the projects in biomechanics as well. And the more I look into it, the more I understood. I was like, okay, this is making a lot of sense. And there's definitely some caveats, and, you know, I'm sure we'll go over that. But that was the first foray into minimalist footwear, was my placement with Ashley Burr at Aurora Cairo over there here in Winnipeg. So, since then, it's just kind of taken off. I've taken my own interest in it, and it's become a part of my life.
That's great. I love that you questioned it, too. You didn't just, as a student, it's really hard sometimes to question your supervisors and were taught not to do that, right? So I actually really enjoyed the fact that you took the time to go and look into it and didn't just take what I had to say as like face value. You read the research, you tested it out. My way into barefoot shoes was just, you know, when I was on mat leave, I stopped wearing shoes and then I went back to work with my $200 shoes and my $300 orthotics. And I was completely fine before wearing them, took my shoes off at the end of a work day, maybe my first shift back, and just got that like plantar fasciitis type ripping feeling in my feet. And that's how I started looking into it and took a course on it. So yeah, it's there's a lot of different avenues on getting into that barefoot minimalist shoe world. And some people think it's just a fad. It's a little bit out there, but, you know, and it's not for everyone, and that's okay. It's something people are interested in.
And my first experience, I think, with barefoot shoes was just seeing folks wearing the Vibram toe shoes. And those look super funky. And you know what? We care about fashion in the society. And that's a reality. And that's important as much as health is important. And I think, you know, since, you know, the early 2000s, it's really skyrocketed the variety of shoes that are available, the different styles and the more conventional looking, but still functionally minimalist shoes. So I think there's a lot more options out there than people realize, and that can definitely reduce the barrier of entry for folks who don't want to give up their fashion.
Absolutely. That's one of the first things people say is I'll show them a pair and they'll go, oh, that looks a lot nicer than I expected, because they have the Vibram five finger shoes in their mind when they think barefoot or minimalist, and they don't realize that.
Great
you can
shoe,
get them.
By the way. Great shoe.
Yeah. No, I desperately want a pair for hiking, but I may have bought too many shoes in the last couple of years. But
yeah.
So as we're talking about these shoes, can you go into a little bit more detail on how you would define a barefoot or minimalist shoe?
Yeah, for sure. So great question, because even in the scientific communities, some folks struggle to define a barefoot shoe. And there is a paper, I can get it to you at some point to put in the links there, but that is trying to classify different shoes. And they use a few different metrics, but basically it's a spectrum. Not all minimalist shoes have all of these features. And I think that it's important for people to know that they don't have to be all or nothing. So the main characteristics for a barefoot shoe, typically a wide toe box. So they're foot shaped. They're going to be wider at those metatarsal heads, allow your toes to splay normally rather than the pointed modern shoes that we see, you know, dress shoes especially, but even just runners. They're going to be foot shaped at the toe. That's a big thing, wide toe box. Next is you're typically not going to have arch support. And along with that, you're going to have a very flexible sole. So you're going to have a foot that can move with your foot. You know, as we know, we have many little joints and many muscles in our foot that, you know, act as that spring force absorption mechanism. In our modern shoes, we typically have a very, very rigid sole. It's almost like a cast. And you were not getting that articulation through all those different joints in the foot. So flexible sole, typically with that, you get no arch support. Again, putting the onus on your muscles to do the work. And then lastly, we don't have a heel lift. So it's dropping that heel, which seems maybe insignificant, but it has quite a lot of implications. There's not going to be the cushioning force for you to heel strike when you're running. So reaching out in front of you and having that heel hit the ground first. It's not going to be very comfortable without a heel cushion. And it also, it's not going to raise your heel and thereby shorten your calf in a resting position. So allows your foot to take on its more natural shape with the wide toe box, move properly with the flexible sole, and just be in a natural position with that lower heel. So that's our minimalist shoes. Yeah, in a nutshell.
Yeah, I that was great. Thank you. I like to think of it as WTFF. So wide, thin, flat, and flexible. And that's a term that I heard from a company called the Foot Collective in Ottawa. And it just kind of reminds me, and that's how I tell clients, like, look for a shoe that's wide, thin, flat, flexible, and or as many of the, you know, ticking off as many as possible. And some clients don't particularly like to have the full barefoot experience. And there's different companies out there like Ultra running shoes that still have that flat shoe without the heel lift, but still have a little bit of arch support and still have a little bit of that cushioning on the bottom, and that can be a really good alternative to, yeah. So
the full on barefoot experience, yeah. And I think that's great though. I think it's great that there's the option to slowly get into it and to maybe you need a wide toe box, but maybe for now you still need that arch support. So I really think it's important to drive home that it's not an all or nothing thing. And I know that some therapists, you know, who really push barefoot shoes will also recommend that person start with an orthotic in there, or could carry over their orthotic from their normal shoe to the barefoot shoe to give them that arch support while they're training their foot muscles, while they're acclimatizing to that new shoe, because our bodies don't like that rapid change. And that's one of the biggest caveats to, suggesting barefoot shoes for folks, is that I make sure that they understand it has to be a transition. It has to be an intentional choice that you're training your foot muscles. You're preparing your feet after they've been in potentially casts, right, for 20, 30, 40 years, depending on how old you are. And really understanding that it's a process. It's not just slap on these barefoot shoes and all your foot problems are going to go away. It has to be that transition. So yeah, I like that there's brands out there offering that that slow variation into the barefoot shoe world.
Yeah, and that's interesting you say that. I don't have my clients put orthotics in their barefoot shoes. I have them transition just through, if they're at home, start spending 5 minutes barefoot at home, or 10 minutes or 20 minutes. And in Canada here, a lot of people typically don't wear shoes at home anyways. So they're already used to being barefoot at home. Now they just have to transfer that into the outdoor world. And if that's the case, where they're already spending, 8 to 10 hours around the house without shoes on, they don't need as much of that. Maybe if they start running in it, they need that, progression. But yeah, it's a little bit of a different integration for everybody.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So that leads into our next question, which, what injuries or concern do you think are most linked to the traditional footwear that we would see? So when we say traditional footwear, we're talking about something that has a little bit more of a narrow toe box, something that has a heel lift, something that has cushioning and arch support. So that would be a traditional shoe.
Right. And I know this will be a little controversial, but there are some that I think we can definitely say are attributed to the shoes we wear, and some that are possibly linked. So one that I would say is definitely linked, I don't think it's super controversial, is plantar fasciitis. I think that it makes sense that if we aren't articulating that midfoot, we aren't using those muscles, we're gonna put a lot of extra strain on the plantar fascia. We are potentially going to have weaker arches, and I know there's lots we could get into about natural arch position. Some folks who naturally have a flatter foot, and that's okay. But overall, I think that plantar fasciitis is definitely a cause of the new shoes we wear. Further to that, we have medial tibial stress syndrome. Some folks don't think of that, the lower leg, as being involved in our footwear choices, but it definitely is. The way our foot sits, the way our foot operates, it affects everything up the chain. And especially if you think of that heel raise, we're putting that calf on, or that gastroc, that soleus, on a shortened position. And when we shorten a muscle for long periods of time, it gets tighter when we try to drop that heel. And so with that, you can have extra tension. You can imagine all the forces going through your foot while you're running. It definitely exacerbates the medial tibial stress syndrome and those muscles pulling away from the bone because they're so excessively tight. Some of the more controversial ones, I think bunions. Folks, may have a predisposing genetic a genetic predisposition to bunions. But when we look at the typical shoe, and you've seen all those videos where we peel off the top of the shoe, it's physically deforming our feet. It's physically crunching the toes together. So it's hard to say that that's not a contributing factor, but there may also be other factors. So I don't want to point the blame completely at shoes for bunions, but it's definitely something to think of. So plantar fasciitis, medial tibial stress syndrome, bunions, and I would say even things like Morton's neuroma are probably impacted by the shoes we wear.
Yeah, and it's I kind of laughed when you said that bunions was controversial, because I'm on the side that, maybe not 100%, but 9 times out of 10, if somebody has a bunion, it's probably caused by the footwear, because our toe box is so narrow. And if you if you take your shoe right now, you take the insole out and you stand on it, if you have a traditional shoe, more than likely your foot is going to fall over the edges of that hole at the toe box, right? Where and to me, that's a pretty good sign that we're squishing our toes together in that toe box, and that's causing that bunion. I think, we can't say for sure that all of these injuries, like you said, 100% are due to the traditional footwear, because if it was, everybody would have it. But what we can say is that they're more than likely, you know, the traditional shoes we wear are contributing to these injuries and these concerns. And these are common injuries and concerns that we see with people wearing shoes that are not fitting their feet properly. And I think that toe box.
I think something to remember for folks is that we haven't always had these type of shoes. It's fairly recent, the modern shoe as we think of it. I believe 1970s is when they started making those hyper cushioned, rigid insole running shoes. And you know, we think about evolutionary progress, we have evolved through a very long period of time to the way we move. And if we've introduced something in the past 50 years that is dramatically changing the way we move, the way we interact with the ground, and as I'm sure we'll get to, the forces and the that are moving through different parts of our body, I think we're going to have pathology. We're going to have injury. We're going to have issues because that's, you know, that's just not how we evolve to move. So I think it's important for folks to realize that, you know, as we call them normal shoes, they're not really normal. Like the ancient Greeks weren't walking around in New Balance, you know, running shoes. They were walking around in barefoot sandals with heel control. And that's, you know, that's something that I think people forget.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I totally agree with all of what you just said, which takes us again to our next question. How do minimalist and barefoot shoes affect our biomechanics? And can you go into detail on that a little bit more than what you just said?
Sure. Yeah. So shout out to Dr. Singer at U of M, by the way, because he was a great biomech prof and made biomechanics, you know, interesting, despite being a difficult, challenging course. So we got an opportunity to work on some of these things, group projects and whatnot, picking things that are interesting to us. So looking at the comparison between normal, or what we call modern shoes, normal shoes, and barefoot shoes, minimalist footwear, we noticed a few different things. So the first most obvious thing is how people strike the ground when they run or when they walk. More apparent when you run, because there's so much force going through the ground. When you are barefoot, if you go out and you run across your front yard, for example, you'll notice you're probably taking on a 4-foot or midfoot strike pattern, meaning you're hitting the ground at around the midfoot towards the toes of the foot. With a running shoe on, when we have that cushion, you see, you know, typical runners or joggers will be reaching out further in front of them and striking with the heel. This has some implications on the force that goes through our body. It has implications on the efficiency that we run. And those implications are that when we strike the ground with our heel, we have a greater period of braking force. So we're slowing ourselves down before we transition to the forefoot and then take off again. So it's less efficient. There's actually greater force because we're striking the ground with our heel, transferring that force through the knee and the hips and subsequently the spine. And then it's transferred. So it's less efficient. Whereas, you know, we'll see the force curve on 4-foot strike, for example. There's less of that braking period. The ramp up of the force acceptance into the body is slower, more gradual. So it occurs over a longer period of time. That translates to less jarring force through the body. And it also takes advantage of our inbuilt suspension system that we have at our ankle and our lower leg. So we have that that spring mechanism occurring right through the plantar side of the foot, the muscles in the plantar fascia, across that calcaneus and up through the Achilles tendon. That mechanism stores spring-loaded energy. It stores that passive energy where we're not necessarily producing ATP to burn the muscle to then explode off the ground. We are, but it's assisted by the spring mechanism in our lower leg. And that's something we really lose out on in the heel strike. So those are just a couple examples of how it changes the way we move. It changes the ground reaction forces. It changes the forces accepted by our body and by our joints. With a cushion on your heel, you can get away with that to some degree. But as soon as you take that away, as soon as you run with barefoot, you'll notice that you're going to change the way you move to a 4 foot pattern. And that's going to keep your center of mass more steady, less oscillation up and down. So when you heel strike, your center of mass tends to oscillate a lot more than if you're 4 foot striking. And so that translates to better efficiency and all that fun stuff. So we could probably go on for another hour about that, but that's the long and short of it.
That's great. Yeah, I feel like that's a topic we could talk forever about, the biomechanics of it. And the thing that I found interesting there was talking about that efficiency with minimalist shoes versus your traditional shoes. And I've run on and off most of my life, and really got into longer distance running in the last 4 years. And I switched over to minimalist shoes in 2017 that I switched over to minimalist shoes. Didn't start running again until 2020, but what I didn't start running consistently. The biggest difference that I found with running in my minimalist shoes was that it was significantly less tiring to run in my minimalist shoes. In my traditional shoes that were, super expensive with orthotics and all that, it just felt heavy. It felt hard. It felt like work, which obviously it is work, right? But it just felt so much more free flowing when it was the minimalist shoes. And I didn't feel like I had to work as hard. And I attribute that to having an improved biomechanical running and just an improved efficiency with running without even having to train that efficiency. And the other thing that I find interesting is in my minimalist shoes, I have a better posture, putting quotation marks there, when I'm running. Because if I hunch over, if I look down in a weird way, I can feel the vibrations going up to my neck and it just doesn't feel nice. Yeah. And so it's almost like I can immediately feel a poor position or poor mechanics that could potentially cause injuries if I were to continue to work through that. So I wonder, and I haven't looked into this a ton yet, but I wonder if our traditional shoes hiding it, we're still getting it at a lower dose over time, which may increase injuries throughout the chain, or does that traditional shoe that heel cushioning, does it just kind of soak that in and stop it from going to the rest of our body? Have you seen any research on that?
I haven't seen research specifically on that, but just to kind of work through it logically, we've got about 5 times our body weight when we accept load from like a jumping or a running, a bounding position. That is a lot of force. There's not a whole lot that inch and a half is going to do. It's going to prevent you from feeling that immediately at the heel. So you're not bruising your heel every time you strike the ground like you would in a barefoot shoe. But there's definitely a significant force going through your body. And any force going through your body, it is going to have some implication if we're doing something so repetitive as running. That would be interesting to see for sure. I don't have any conclusive research to give you on that one, but you did spark something I forgot to touch on, which is running surface. And the running surface you run on is super important. So if you are transitioning to barefoot shoes, consider running beside the sidewalk on the grass. Or, go for trail runs if that's accessible to you. The pounding on the concrete isn't always the best course of action. One other thing I will add to that is the cadence. You mentioned having a better posture, feeling like you're more upright. That's because typically in minimalist footwear, you're going to adopt a shorter stride length. You're going to be having more foot contacts with the ground. That kind of translates here that these things are changing the way we move. And like I said, our body didn't evolve to heel strike pattern. Just didn't. It's just not. That's something I could say very confidently. We didn't evolve that way. Doesn't mean it's not going to have its roles. Something we haven't touched on yet is the performance side of things. I've worked a lot with track and field athletes, both in school and afterwards. The performance world is totally different than the health and wellness world. We need to make that distinction very clear for folks. The things that a professional track athlete is doing aren't necessarily going to be helpful or healthful for the general population. Their spikes, the shoes they wear when they run, called spikes, they are so narrow, they are so rigid, and that allows them to produce a lot of force and get those record sprint times. That's great for performance, pardon me, but it's not great for your foot health if you're doing that on a regular basis. So no, I don't think even in track athletes would wear spikes for all of their training. That would be bananas, and they would have so much foot pain. So that's just something to keep in mind as I get off on a tangent there.
No, that's great. I had no idea that they wore narrow
spikes.
Spikes. Yeah, I didn't know that. So that's interesting. Okay, so wrapping this up, how can our listeners practically apply this to their daily lives going forward? So let's say we have an athletic therapist listening to this, and they're wondering how they can start learning more about this and what they can do today to apply this into their lives and their practice.
For sure. Yeah. I mean, if you're interested, you're going to start looking into these things. You're going to start finding those resources. There's lots out there. Like you mentioned, the Foot Collective, they're a brand. They're meant to sell things. So there are going to be, different motivations there, but they have a lot of good information that's easily accessible to folks. Reaching out to different shoe companies, figuring out what the differences are, just so that you can give your patients a starting point to go look at maybe Vivo Barefoots, or go look at Zero Shoes, or go look at what's some other Vibram brands. Looking at what are the differences between them, looking at what's good and bad. As far as prescription in general, we need to remember, as we alluded to before, that it's a transition period. It's not an all or nothing. Depending on where your patient's at, they may need to work on intrinsic foot strength before transitioning the shoe. They may need to, put an orthotic in. I know you're against that, but it's an option, right, for folks who aren't quite ready to give up their arch support because they don't feel like they're there, or they're just, their life doesn't accommodate the 5 minutes on, 5 minutes off sort of thing. They need to be in a work shoe all day or something like that. So it's just giving folks options, because we are humans. We may know what's right for us, and we may not do it. So finding that happy medium where the person's able to, take care of the body, feel like they're moving forward, but not, leading them into injury from a drastic change. Those are the couple little tidbits I'd give folks to think about there as practitioners.
Yeah, and I would add into that, we learn best by experiencing things ourselves. So give it a try. And that doesn't mean you have to go out and buy a new pair of shoes. If you don't spend time barefoot at home, start, with 5 minutes. And if that feels good, then the next day, spend a little bit more time. If it feels fatiguing, tiring, leave it at that 5 minutes. If it felt really, if you have a little bit of pain, then back off a little bit the next day. Just because we have pain does not mean it was bad. It just means that you haven't gotten to that tolerance point yet. And so experiencing that for yourself can be a really good way to learn how to integrate it into sharing that with your clients, but also looking out for different resources, like Nate said, which is really important. And that brings us to sharing with you that Nathan and I are working together on a project. And in fall of 2024, we'll be coming out with our new workshop, Minimalist Footwear, Implications for Health, Performance, and Therapy. So if that is something that you're interested in, if you're interested in learning more about this workshop, get on the mailing list. I'll put the link with the show notes. And then, keep an eye on Nathan's and my social media platforms, because we'll definitely be posting about it on there. And Nathan, did you have anything to add?
Oh, just have fun with it. Our feet are the main way we interact with the world and the ground. Have fun with it. It doesn't have to be all medical and sciencey. We were meant to move this way. It's good for you, and it feels good. Just the joy of putting on those barefoot shoes and literally touching the ground and being like, oh my gosh, I actually feel the differences in the ground. That's just such a cool feeling. And you know, I'd recommend that to everyone to try at least give this a thought, you know, because life's too short to be living with foot pain. So that's my 2 cents there.
Totally agree. Can you share with everybody how they can find you?
Absolutely. So I'm most active on Instagram. My handle is never_average_therapy. That's never average therapy with underscores between. Or they can find me on my website, www.bio.site/NateSimon for all my links.
Thank you for that, Nathan. So just going to go through a recap of everything we just talked about. You know, starting with our second question of how do you define a barefoot or minimalist shoe? So we're looking at that wide, thin, flat, flexible shoe, a wide toe box that allows for our foot to splay, a shoe that's foot shaped, no arch support, something that's a little bit flexible, no heel lift. And we're also looking at spectrum. So there's not necessarily all of these different, you know, like this is the only shoe. There's a spectrum. And there's, when you hear somebody talking about minimalist shoes, it might not be your typical shoe. So it's important to define what you're talking about when you say minimalist. And then when we get into talking about injuries that are linked to traditional shoes, some of them might be controversial. And we know that it's not necessarily 100% this is injury caused by our traditional shoes, which would be, you know, our typical runners that you would see. But some of the common ones that we look at with these shoes would be, with traditional shoes, would be plantar fasciitis, medial tibial stress syndrome, bunions, and Morton's neuroma. And then we got into talking a little bit about biomechanics and how, you know, it wasn't till the 1970s that we started adding more cushioning into the shoes, more heel lift. And when we wear a traditional shoe versus a minimalist shoe, there's going to be a change in our foot strike. And a traditional shoe is going to be less efficient than a minimalist shoe. A minimalist shoe allows us to use our gastroc, our Achilles, that spring mechanism to be able to have a more efficient walking and running stride. And then you mentioned some ways that listeners can apply this to their daily lives going forward. And we talked about, you know, experiencing it, having fun, taking a course, looking out for resources, learning that information, and remembering that we have to take time to build that tolerance. And so it's not going to be a switch from always wearing an orthotic shoe to switching completely 100% over to minimalist shoe. We're starting at, you know, maybe 5 minutes for somebody if that's where their tolerance is, and building it up from there. And did I miss anything on that recap?
No, I think you hit every point there. Just taking the time to transition into those shoes. It's not an overnight thing. We spent however many decades potentially in these other casts. So keep that in mind.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for joining us today, Nathan.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, Ashley.